Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Trump, in the White House and before, likes to brag about his wealth and what he owns. As the House Intelligence Committee looks into Russia ties, it's also worth looking at what the president and his family businesses owe and to whom. It's hundreds of millions, much of it abroad. He's not the only one in his administration with big foreign banking connections. This hour on Point in our 100-day spotlight following President Trump's money, the president's debt, and debtors. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you want to know who holds the president's debt? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us first today from Washington, Drew Harwell, business reporter for The Washington Post. Drew, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Tom.
Listen with us for just a second to a couple of clips of tape here, Drew. This was an interview with Fox News just last Wednesday. And here the president's telling Tucker Carlson that he's out of it. It's not about business anymore. He's moving on. He's on to other things.
I don't care about me anymore. I care about the people out there. And, you know, me, I'm very satisfied. I'm not going to go back into building major buildings someday. I'm not going to be doing what I used to do and used to have a good time doing it.
Yeah, had a good time doing it. But others are still wondering who holds the debt and what significance might that have for how the president sees the world, how he acts in the world. Back in Steve Mnuchin's confirmation hearing before the Senate Finance Committee to be Treasury Secretary, Missouri Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill raised questions about the president's foreign debt and national security.
You and your job as Secretary of the Treasury that is supposed to be determining national security interests based on foreign investment, the American people want to know how much debt that is owed by the Trump businesses is owed to foreign entities, and because that could have a direct impact on our national security.
What's owed and to whom? We'll look at that. What did Mnuchin say in response? He said he would check it out.
If I am confirmed, I assure you that I will make sure that the requirements of the Constitution are upheld. And I think you have a valid point about foreign debt and understanding foreign things. And if I'm confirmed, I will research that and get back to you.
So here we are, 2 months plus later. Drew Harwell, do we know what the president owes and to whom he owes it at home and abroad?
We have a certain idea, but we don't know down to the cent as much as we would like to. You know, what we can tell is from what President Trump has given out in personal financial disclosure filings, where he's listed his liabilities, his mortgages, his lines of credit, the debt that can be publicly known. And we know it's in the hundreds of millions, maybe 600 million, maybe more, maybe a little bit less. So it's an incredible amount of money that he and the business that has his name on it owes to banks in Germany, to banks across Europe, to private financiers. And a lot of those debts have been sort of rebundled and resold to other people. So his debt can be held by, you know, dozens of entities that we really don't know, because he has a private business. He has been very close to the vest with things like tax returns that would tell us a little bit more about, you know, this incredible amount of sort of debt that has plagued him and will continue to plague him for a number of years. So we know it's a lot of money for any individual, even rich person, but we don't exactly know who holds it and what they intend to do with it.
Can we put it in a little context? Is it a lot of money? The president, I think, along the way has said he's worth $10 billion. If you're, I mean, $600 million is a lot of money. Yeah. If you're really worth $10 billion, is it still a lot of money or just the cost of business?
That's right. I mean, that's a good question. And let's step back and understand that Mr. Trump has been doing this for decades. I mean, he started in New York in the 70s making real estate. Real estate is, as a business, very debt-laden because it costs a lot of money to build a building, and you have to take out a lot of debt and hope that it pays off in the long term. So, you know, there are a lot of developers out there who have a lot in debt, hundreds of millions of dollars even, for these projects that they intend to pay off. Normally, it's a very common transaction, nothing too, you know, sinister on a developer having a lot of debt. debt. And these are loans that Mr. Trump has accumulated over you know, years and decades. So it's not, you know, it's not crazy to understand that he has a lot of money in debt. But we also have to understand, I mean, his business, the Trump Organization, is a private company, and it's really not that big. I mean, it's effectively a family-owned, almost boutique sort of development firm. If he wasn't president, we probably wouldn't care too much about it. It's not one of the world's great builders, as he would sort of suggest. So, you know, we have a family-owned business that President Trump has, you know, sort of stepped away from the management of, but still has financial ties to, still has ownership of. And this business has an incredible amount of debt that's tied to it. And to pay off these debts, you know, sometimes companies will have to take out new loans going ahead. They'll have to keep their lenders happy with the decisions they're making because they want to keep that line of credit flowing. So this debt, even if it is, you know, a fraction of his wealth, and again, we really don't know what he's worth because he's kept that pretty privately too. So we have a lot of money in debt that how is he going to pay it off? Are the lenders going to call those loans due? Are they going to freeze up lending to the company that President Trump has given to his kids, that who he still cares very much about? Are they going to freeze lending to that company and effectively handicap that company unless they get their way in the future? I mean, that's what we start to think about when we think, how big is this debt? How big of a burden could it be on the president? And could it influence him to do something that may not be in the best interest of the country?
And some of this debt, much of it, is on the family-owned businesses, but some is Donald Trump's personal debt, I'm reading here, millions of personal debt.
Yeah, over the years, he's done something that not a lot of developers like to do, which is guarantee loans personally off his own finances, the personal guarantee. You know, a lot of developers won't do this because they don't want, if the project goes under, to have to bear the cost of paying off that loan. But Mr. Trump has written lots of personal guarantees over the years, tens of millions. And when the companies have gone bankrupt, as there have been six bankruptcies tied to Trump companies, those personal guarantees have been called in at times, and it's cost him a lot of money. So you start to see, I mean, the ties between Trump, the person, now the president, and Trump, the company that bears his name and sells licensing and all over the country, they're very strong ties. They're not like, you know, a typical CEO in a company that are still sort of distant. The Trump sort of brand and person are you can't extricate both of those. So that's why these debts become very important, because they're not just on some business entity that's separate from the man. They're very closely tied to his finances and his success as a person.
How short a leash do these lenders have the Trump businesses on? If they don't like something, can they call the loan? Can they make the business, Mr. Trump, his family businesses, vulnerable at a moment's notice or once in a while? I mean, what's their leverage, really?
Yeah. Every loan is different, you know, and when we talk about being able to call in a loan, that may not be the case for every sort of piece of financing. And President Trump has lawyers and you know, sort of assistants who help finance these purchases. And every sort of asset is different depending on the tower, depending on the lender. But some loans can be called in. And even worse, I mean, for a company that depends on credit in the long term to be able to build these projects in the first place, mm-hmm. it's really, will the lender continue to offer financing? Will they loan the next time, right. And you know, some of these businesses are like sharks. They need to continue moving. They need to continue gobbling up debt to survive, because this company isn't – I mean, the Trump Organization isn't like a company that builds widgets and sells them and makes a certain amount of money, can take out new loans and make more widgets. It effectively sells its name. It sells the rights to finance under a brand that is now quite presidential. So you know, it depends on getting a guarantee from the bank that they're good for a certain amount of money, they can do the next project and continue on and survive. So you know, if it's not calling in the loan, if it's not demanding that the money come due right now, which is a fairly rare proposition, although it does happen in lending circles, you know, we're not going to lend the next project. We're not going to lend money to the company that your children own, and that's, you know, that can be really damaging to a project, to a company that needs these things to survive.
So, Drew, if debt can create leverage on the debtor. Who owns the debt on the Trump family businesses, on Donald Trump? Who owns it?
There are a number of them. The biggest lender that we talk about is Deutsche Bank. They're a German bank, one of the biggest financial institutions in Europe. They have given out a number of loans, I think four or five big ones that we know of, tied to Trump assets. But there are several other sort of smaller banks and lenders who have loans that we publicly know of through these financial disclosures. But again, those loans are – when we think about loans being securitized, back in the housing crisis, you know, a bunch of mortgages were given out to homeowners, then chopped up and resold to investors as part of these big packages that ended up being quite toxic. The Trump loans are also sort of bundled and resold to investors who sort of buy them and continue the ball rolling. So we have a number of sort of lenders who wrote the loans in the first place, a small number, but those have multiplied as those loans have continued on. So who exactly owns the debt of the president's company? We don't even know, which is a sort of an amazing thing to realize.
But does he know?
We don't exactly know. I think he might know. I think the company, but maybe not, because when these things start to securitize, it's really the lender who's selling the note in the first place. So the borrower
could he get
not
a note
exactly
from somebody in Moscow saying, "Hey, I just bought a bunch of your debt. Have a nice day."
I don't know. It's possible. You know, that's where we get into how odd it is, how murky these private financing agreements are. These aren't public loan terms. You can sort of see the notes in some public databases, property databases, that sort of thing. But the reality of it is that these loans are sold and resold in really kind of murky sort of shadow marketplaces that we don't exactly – we can't really trace the lineage. We can't trace who's buying it or for why or for what intention. So we don't really know, and we don't really know it because – largely because – you know, the Trump Organization and President Trump himself really don't talk that much about it. It seems like it's something they don't really want to publicly make a lot of hay of.
And of course, Deutsche Bank, Donald Trump's biggest lender, agreed at the end of last year to pay more than $7 billion to the U.S. Department of Justice for its role in shady mortgage abuse cases in the crash. Drew Harwell, business reporter for The Washington Post, please stick with us. We are looking this hour at Donald Trump's money and Donald Trump's debt. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour as the House Intelligence Committee opens up its hearings today on Russia and the election season. We're talking about Donald Trump's money and Donald Trump's debt, who he owes what, and why it might matter, maybe, to how he governs the country. And then there's Wilbur Ross, Jared Kushner, Russia, China. There's a lot to look at here. Drew Harwell is with us from the Washington Post, business reporter there. He's been paying a lot of attention. You can join us as well. Do you believe, since the president says his kids are running the business, that there aren't issues here? Is raising these issues, exploring them, being too sensitive about it, too skeptical? Or is it crucial? Is it vital? Is it important to know who the president's in debt to? Back in December, we had Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff. Of course, he's the minority ranking minority member of the House Intelligence Committee. Called on the then President-elect Trump to divest himself and his family of business interests, saying that not doing so would create an enormous problem.
There's no way that he can divorce himself of the knowledge he has of where the assets are located and how his decisions as president can affect his business interests. And the country will always wonder, as long as he has those business interests, is he doing this because he wants to continue doing business in Turkey? Is he doing it because he wants to grow his business in Russia? Is it because he has loans from China? Those are not questions we want the nation to be asking.
May not want to be asking, but there they are. The president trying to put sort of blanket denials, blanket assertions out there to say, don't worry about it. Here he was in January at a news conference. A reporter asked Donald Trump if Russia had any financial leverage over him. Here's the president-elect's response.
I have no deals in Russia. I have no deals that could happen in Russia because we've stayed away. And I have no loans with Russia. As a real estate developer, I have very, very little debt. I have assets that are, and now people have found out how big the company is. I have very little debt. I have very low debt. But I have no loans with Russia at all.
I have no loans with Russia at all. Drew Harwell is with us from the Washington Post. James Henry joins us right now as well from Boynton Beach, Florida. Economist, lawyer, investigative journalist, senior fellow at the Columbia Center on Sustainable Investment. He's been writing about all of this, a lot of it, banking ties here. James Henry, welcome back to One Point. Thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
How do you read that? I have no deals in Russia. I have no loans with Russia. I know you, well, you listen closely. What does that say to you?
Well, the issue with Donald Trump's finances is not projects in Russia, although he has tried hard to get them. It's the fact that he's benefited enormously from a tidal wave of Russian flight capital. He's assembled a virtual Star Wars bar scene of private connections in Russia with from, you know, garks, oligarchs, mobster mavens, fraudsters. We have convicted felons. And the issue here is not so much the debt, but the equity side of this. We have seen project after project with all kinds of dubious financing coming out of Russia or the former Soviet Union. One of your guests today will talk about Azerbaijan, but we've also looked at the Trump Soho and their dependence on some Kazakhstani money for a failed project in New York City.
So when you say equity, Trump, you mean who's investing in his projects? Not loaning,
that's
but
exactly
actually,
right.
actually getting a skin in the game with him.
That's exactly right. And his partners are, you know, I mean, he's a very well-connected guy in the sense that he has all kinds of relationships with, you know, very strange people. So a lot of the focus in Washington now has been on his, you know, intelligence connections and the hacking of the election. But I'm talking about a body of evidence that has to do with, you know, private investors. So if you look at, for example, the Trump Soho in New York, which was a project that was developed.
This is a hotel, Jim?
Yeah, it's a okay. It's a tall tower project developed with a company called Bayrock, you know, formed basically by a couple of guys who – one of whom was a convicted felon. Russian origins. His father was a member of the Russian mafia. They turned to an Icelandic equity group to get financing, which, you know, itself was closely tied to a lot of Russian money. And I think, you know, this is the pattern. There's also an interesting pattern that we're just beginning to understand in, you know, case of Panama, the Trump Ocean Club there. An enormous number of condos were purchased by Russian money and actually sold by people who were representing Russian organized crime interests, a kind of pre-buy situation where Trump made out nicely from the deal, but the project ultimately failed in 2014. And this is a pattern that's happened again and again. So this isn't – you know, I'm very familiar with the Deutsche Bank loan. They account for about half of his loans. $300 million out of $650 million. Deutsche Bank was just tagged with laundering up to $10 billion of Russian dirty money using Cyprus and New York. You know, it has been very close, probably the only major bank that would lend to Trump. You know, in 2008, Trump was very close to, I think, defaulting on a $40 million. Personal payment that he owed to Deutsche Bank based on another failed project in Chicago. And he was saved from that by Dmitry Robolovlov, a Russian gark who came in and bought his house for twice what Trump had paid for it in 2004.
Bought a Trump house in Florida for $95 million, about double what he had paid just a few years earlier.
Exactly. So I've interviewed the number two creditor of Donald Trump, which is Ladder Capital, a company in New York City. They basically have straightforward first mortgages on his more valuable properties. But what we learned from his recent, you know, the two pages of his tax returns from 2005 is this is a fellow that could not possibly be worth $10 billion. Even if you capitalize the entire gross income that he showed for that year, $153 million, you know, we're talking about somebody who's worth more than, you know, no more than $2 to $3 billion. And I think, you know, the issue is how did he finance all these projects over time? And despite the fact that they were – there's a persistent track record of failure, he kept on getting financing from – especially from the former Soviet Union countries. So this is the pattern of kind of collusion that I would like to see the Congress begin to investigate.
Drew, late last week we saw this Reuters report saying that at least 63 individuals with Russian passports or addresses had bought at least $98+ million worth of property in 7 Trump-branded luxury towers in southern Florida. Is that a big deal? I mean, that's not – they're not lending to him. They're buying. They're buying what he's selling. Does that somehow make him – vulnerable or just a smart guy? They had a lot of money and he sold them property.
I think this goes exactly to what James was just talking about, in that Russian flight capital has sort of a mind of its own sometimes, where people within Russia who, you know, rich people who want to sort of get money without out of the borders without it being sort of abducted into the Russian kleptocracy will invest into projects like this because it seems like a safe haven. They get some nice real estate out of it. There's a cover story in that they have a nice condo on the beach in Florida. It's very lovely. It's got a guy named Mr. Trump's name on it. And so you start to get these really strong connections between lots of money and a developer who needs lots of money to continue building these projects. So I think it is a big deal. I mean, these are connections that you would never have seen with a president in the past, not just because they didn't do real estate, but because they had sort of put their assets in a blind trust. They had sort of sworn off that connection when they entered the White House, believing that they didn't want that to potentially sour their independence, sour their ability to make decisions in a dispassionate way. But here we have a president who has made very few steps to liquidate those sorts of assets or to step away from those kinds of lending issues. And here we are. The president is one step away from oligarchs who have sequestered their money outside of Russia or used places like Deutsche Bank, as James was saying, to do a system of mirror trades where they're effectively laundering money out through a bank outpost outside of Russia. So, the fact that he's just one step away, that President Trump is just one step away from some of these people and some of these huge lending obligations, I think, is a big deal. And the fact that we know so little about him is also, cause for concern from everybody questioning his decisions.
Drew Harwell, James Henry, please stand by. I want to go to our listeners. David in Oklahoma City. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. I'm just curious. My understanding is that Congress could subpoena the tax records, and a lot of this could be answered. Is it because the Congress is Republican held that that hasn't happened? I mean, it seems to be a lot of debate about something that could be cleared up relatively easily.
We'll pick it up. James Henry, yep. Would the tax records clear all this up, or would we just be in another tangle or mystery zone?
Well, they would help. I mean, one of the things we'd learn is whether Trump has Swiss bank accounts. I mean, if Romney, who had nothing like Trump's international business connections, had a couple accounts, Trump is surely likely to have offshore accounts, and those would have to be declared. If he didn't declare them, at least we'd know. Secondly, they would disclose loans that were made to his personal LLCs, about a third of his income is reported to come from partnerships, $67 million out of the $153 in 2005, the 1 year we know about. So, are those LLCs financed with foreign debt as well as equity? Yeah. I mean, that would be exposed here. So, those are two aspects of this. Mm. But the overall pattern here is something that's staring us in the face. We already know that, they were convicted mobsters who bought 5 Trump Tower apartments and were running gambling rings out of Trump Tower. We already know that Wilbur Ross, when he went into the Bank of Cyprus, was basically partnered up with a Russian-owned bank that was involved in money laundering. So, the fact that a lot of these connections should be disturbing, not because there was some Putin plot, but because we have a president here who has a limited concern about who he actually does business with, and a pattern of not only him but other people in his administration of basically turning a blind eye to these kinds of connections.
Let's look at the question, though, Drew, of whether Congress could subpoena all this. Could they just send a subpoena to somewhere and say, give us the record? The IRS or the Trump companies themselves, do they even have the power to do that?
They could. And you're starting to hear the pitter-patter of footsteps of some congresspeople sort of questioning whether that's something they want to do. They certainly have the right to subpoena records like that. But the question is, will they? I mean, we have a Republican-led Congress who may be sort of forced into the position where they feel like that's the safest way where they can go. But we've also had sort of a limited concern from some Republicans in Congress who have said a lot of these conflict of interest concerns have been much ado about nothing, that we should trust the president, that some of these are just sort of shell games, maybe even perpetuated by the Democrats to distract from the issues. I think that's something that we might see, though, because there are so many answers that we could get from the tax returns. They wouldn't necessarily have a smoking gun. There would be no, you know, Russia Inc. giving to the Trump Organization. It wouldn't be that simple. But like James said, I mean, this would be the first step to understanding, was there money going to Trump companies, LLCs, that would have helped kept his empire afloat? We just don't know right now, and so I think that's something they'll be pressing for as we go.
If he had crashed in 2008, he undoubtedly wouldn't have been a successful candidate, I would think, and probably not president today. But here we are. We're looking at Donald Trump's debt and what he owns and who he owes. Anami is calling from Charlotte, Vermont. Anami, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom, and hi, panel. I have a question. How is it that Trump could compel the Obama administration to release his birth certificate, which is ludicrous, and Trump cannot be compelled to release his tax return, which is far more crucial?
You mean Citizen Trump all the years ago when he was charging that Barack Obama was not born, was not an American citizen born?
Right, okay. You know, there's one action that can be compelled, and another far more important one cannot be compelled. So I'd like, you know, the panels and your opinion on that.
Well, I mean, we already hear Drew Harwell saying there's the pitter-patter of feet heading toward perhaps some compulsion, but it's, on the other hand, it's not hard to see the politics of this. Congress is fully Republican-controlled right now, and they've got an agenda they want to put through. Let me get one more, Anime. Justin in Moorhead City, North Carolina. Justin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Two-part question for you. First part, it seems like we've been overburdened by fact-finding missions from this administration, the executive office. My question really is, what happens when these fact-finding missions mature, and what kind of punitive action will we see?
You say fact-finding missions, you mean we're overburdened by what, the questions surrounding the president? It creates a burden for whom? Everybody?
For us, the media, we become consumed by this.
Yeah.
The courts having to deal with all the suits and basically general fact-finding from the from incorrect statements that are made.
Yep. Okay.
My next part to this question, I'd like you to consider when answering it, will the president be allowed to backpedal or infer that his statements have been taken out of context? At what point do we call the bluff?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, there's the overall weight here, Drew, of questions that have been raised. And then there's the backpedal question. For example, when the president says, as we heard in that tape, I have no deals in Russia, I have no loans with Russia. Is there some parsing that, you know, is that carefully stated, like lawyerly comment there that he could say, well, no, I don't have it with Russia, I have it with Russians? Or what, Drew?
It's possible. And, you know, the president has certainly backpedaled before, so it could happen again. But that statement was itself almost a backpedaling from a couple of years prior, where his son, Donald Trump Jr., had said, our assets have a disproportionate share of the cross-section is disproportionately Russian. He was suggesting that a lot of the money that had come into projects, including like those towers and that Reuters talked about, the towers in South Florida where there's a lot of Russian money, a lot of that money had come from the Russians. So that was him, contrasting with his father's statements about Russia. But, you know, as we learn more on these fact-finding missions, which I think we're just at the beginning of, I mean, realize that he's only been in office for a couple months and we've been consumed by these questions and we still have more questions than answers. I think those are going to continue. And they're not just going to be sort of questions coming from Capitol Hill. But, you know, we have lawyers across the country who are weighing some of these questions about the emoluments clause, if the president can take money money from foreign sources, questions about the business ties for the president. You know, I think these are going to continue. And whether people will allow the president to backpedal, I mean, that's a question for the American public and for Congress. I mean, we're starting to see some calls for oversight from people like Jason Chaffetz, who has not exactly given it. So, you know, that's the question. Are people going to keep the heat on, or are they going to let these things slide?
James Comey, FBI chief, before the House Intelligence Committee today, testifying there, confirming that the FBI is investigating possible links, coordination between Trump associates and Russia. Is investigating. That's as far as that goes right now, at least so far in the hearings. James Henry, economist, lawyer, investigative journalist, he writes plenty for DC Report here, joins us from Florida today. Drew Harwell, business reporter with the Washington Post, is here. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Thanks for listening to this On Point podcast. I want you to take a moment to think about the people you care about. Have they ever listened to a podcast? All this month, we're asking our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. This one, another one, do it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know how to download them, give them a quick lesson. You'll be opening up a new world for them. Tell us what you're recommending with the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. And thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Donald Trump's money, Donald Trump's debt, what he owns, who he owes money to, and why it might matter. Drew Harwell is with us, business reporter for The Washington Post. James Henry is here today. He writes for DC Report and has spent a lot of time as an investigative journalist looking at shady banking practices around the world. You can join us as well. What do you think? Is raising these issues, exploring them, being too sensitive, too skeptical, or is it crucial, vital, to know the financial backdrop to the president of the United States? Adam Davidson joins us in just a moment from The New Yorker to write about what he calls Donald Trump's worst deal, an investment that we'll look at in just a second here. A couple of calls first. Glendale, Kentucky. Alec is calling. Hi, Alec. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm just kind of curious as to when it's going to really stop with all the, you know, going after his tax returns. Because to me, my tax returns really never say anything about where my money is going. So I'm just kind of curious about that.
What, do you think it's too much attention to these issues, Alec, or... Let me just understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I do. I think it's too much attention to this and not enough attention to everything else that is more important, the things that he's been doing.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, we've done a lot of shows on steps that he's been taking to do X, Y, and Z. But if, I mean, and I'll raise your question about tax return, I promise, but if he did owe a lot of money to somebody and that might have influence over him, would that bother you, Alec?
Not really, because most of us do owe, and it doesn't affect the person that we are.
Let us pick it up. I appreciate your call. James Henry, pick that up. I mean, Alex says, my tax returns don't show you that much, and people owe money, and they go on living. It doesn't change the way they are, what they do.
Well, I think we've gotten used to presidents actually releasing their tax returns voluntarily.
Take the question at face value. What would it show that Alex might not intend to see there?
Well, as I said before, we'd first of all learn about some of the private LLC financing that he's done. Mm-hmm. He has a 500-page tax return once you add up all the attachments.
That's not like mine.
So it's not like the gentleman in Kentucky or mine or yours. You know, he has literally hundreds of companies around the planet. All of them have local operations and financing. You know, this is unprecedented in the United States because we've never had a global real estate guy be elected president. So I think, you know, it is possible to over emphasize all this business about the tax returns. We will learn something from it. And it is important to keep our eye on all of the kind of glaring policy changes that Trump is involved in.
But it does seem weird to have this one exception when it really matters. The guy who's had the most money of any president maybe ever. And that's the time that we don't get to any transparency into what his businesses are and how they're doing.
Well, exactly. And, you know, every other certainly around the globe, every other democracy has much more disclosure for public officials than we have in the United States. And in this case, the president has even chosen not to – you know, this is a president who this morning tweeted that there was, quote, no evidence that, quote, POTUS colluded with the Russians. You know, this he's spending time on Twitter. You know, and you have to look at that precise statement carefully. I mean, why doesn't he just – you know, what is he hiding? Why doesn't he just release the darn returns? That's why this issue is continuing. It's not because the Democrats are obsessed with it. It's because he won't just do the right thing.
FBI Director James Comey confirming today that the FBI is investigating possible links there between – or coordination between Trump associates and Russia. I mean, Drew Harwell – what's your sense when people ask why this matters? And again, it comes back to, well, how could this leverage be exercised? Is there could there be something like a gun to the head of the president that we can't see with red lines saying, well, if you do X, Y, or Z, your business empire is doomed? Does anybody have that kind of sway over the over his family's holdings?
Anything's possible, right? I mean, I think Alex's question is a really good one, and it's one we should be asking. Why do we care about these returns, even if they've been sort of given every year? Have we just sort of taken them for granted? Is there really anything in there?
By other
but, yeah, I mean the difference. Right. I mean, the difference is, as we were talking about, I mean, he has more than 500 companies. It would say how much money he receives every year in income. And if that goes up during his presidency, I think there are some important questions to ask. If that money was gained because he was his business was prospering and he did things the right way, or if it you know, benefited from currying favor from others, people investing in the business. So, you know, the tax returns would tell us, I think that they would be one of the best sort of independent validated documents that we have. We have to remember that so much of what we know about Trump's finances come from Trump himself. Can we truly believe everything, every piece of information that we get from him? I wonder. You know, these are when you submit returns to the IRS, they audit him, and you know, there's an independent sort of validation process that goes along with that. So. You know, the tax returns would give us a third-party view of what we see in Trump's finances. So I think there is some benefit to that. Maybe we could overemphasize them, and I think we're at a point where we've gotten them for so long, for 40 years, from 40 years of presidents, that it's become something that's so valuable for, I think, voters to assess on. They've certainly told us a lot about presidents in the past.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, to my mind, it's just we deserve to know what sway, what financial sway there could be over the president of the United States. It just seems fundamental, but that's me. Drew Harwell, please stand by. James Henry, Adam Davidson joins us right now from New York, staff writer for The New Yorker, covers business, technology, economics. His latest piece is Donald Trump's Worst Deal in the March issue, looking at the connection between a Trump hotel in Azerbaijan and some pretty interesting characters. Adam Davidson, welcome to On Point. Thanks a lot for being here.
Hi, Tom. So glad to be here.
Describe this property to us in Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, and why you're paying attention to it.
Yeah, and I would just say in answer to the last caller's question, this is exactly why we want to see his tax returns and, frankly, a whole lot more about his business because, aside from all the very good reasons that we were just given, because this is a businessman who has stayed very close to the margins of acceptable corporate behavior throughout his career. What I decided to do after the election was really dig into one deal. You know, there are dozens of deals around the world that happened in the last decade. I decided to focus on this one deal in Baku, Azerbaijan. And what I found was, I mean, to me, it was deeply, deeply shocking. And it was, the level, the complete lack of due diligence, the willingness to do a deal with one of the most corrupt political figures in one of the most corrupt countries in the world, a deal that every business person I talked to, other than at the Trump Organization, said they would never go near. Just for their own self-preservation, they wouldn't consider doing it, including some deeply troubling ties that his partner had with Iran. It showed me, I picked up one rock, and I found way more than I expected. Mm. Just shocking, shocking business practices. What will happen when we look into the dozens of other deals?
This one is a 33-story ultra-luxury property in Baku, in Azerbaijan, among the most corrupt nations in the world by many measures. And the Trump operation went in there. And who did they get in bed with, Adam?
So they got in bed with a family called the Mammadovs. The Zia Mammadov was, until very recently, the transportation minister of Azerbaijan. He's Azerbaijan, you know, I barely knew where it was before I went there. It's a former Soviet republic, one of the poorest, least attended to republics, just north of Iran, south of Russia and Georgia, on the Caspian Sea. Very yep. poor place that all of a sudden discovered huge oil and gas deposits in the Caspian and in the Caspian Sea, and became wildly rich in a very short period of time.
Including this Zia Mammadov, who, as you report, when he did the hotel deal with the Trump Organization, he had a salary of $12,000, but he was a billionaire. Okay.
Yes. He saved well.
Yeah, very well.
Yeah.
So what was the Trump Organization involvement here?
Well, technically, the Trump Organization did a deal with Zia's brother, Elton, who was a sitting member of parliament, and his son, Anar, and also Zia's former driver. Although everyone but the Trump Organization believes they were all fronts for Zia, the transportation minister. And this project has all the hallmarks of a money laundering operation for a deeply corrupt project. Some of the money that might have been laundered, we don't know, through this project, was the proceeds from a deep relationship that Zia Mammadov had with a company called Azar Pasilo. And I think in my article, with exhaustive research, show pretty convincingly, I think, that this company was a front for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. So in other words, there's a decent chance, we don't know for sure, that the Trump Organization was paid with money that originated in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. That is illegal, to receive money from the IRGC.
Because of international sanctions supported by the U.S. on Iran.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Trump has come out particularly strongly against Iran. I mean, he's tried to amp up sanctions on the IRGC, in particular sanctions that ironically would potentially impact him more than almost any other American business.
But maybe that says this president is not swayed by his financial ties. Maybe they invested in the property he was involved with there in Azerbaijan, but he's criticizing Iran anyway. So what's the problem?
Well, there are many, many problems that I mean, being swayed is one thing. But what we don't want is a president or any public official who's making decisions based on their own past economic behavior. So if he was getting tough on Iran specifically to distance himself from this past indiscretion, that would be deeply troubling, I would think.
Or past broken, no breaking of the law, even. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is amazing. I wrote an article in a major American magazine that showed that the President of the United States may have received money from the IRGC. Imagine that was written about any public official other than
Iran's Revolutionary Guard. It's just, it's wild. I mean, if it had been Barack Obama, the Washington would be on fire.
Yes. And so I don't think we then need to wait until we show the direct impact it had on foreign policy. I will say that the business practices that are abundantly clear in this deal and many others, the completely lackadaisical approach to risk management, to choosing partners, demonstrate, I don't know how to describe it, a comfort with just completely outside of the mainstream irresponsibility that leave aside morality, leave aside being a good president, just a good business person would not engage these kinds of risks. He took on hundreds of millions of dollars in potential fines and even prison time for a few million dollars in profit. It literally doesn't make sense as a business deal. And it makes me deeply troubled about the organization and the person who runs it that would get into such a deal.
And that for a property that's never even opened. Adam Davidson, stand by. Drew Harwell, James Henry. Chris, in Chester, Vermont. Chris, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much, Tom. Great show, by the way. This whole situation is just totally outrageous to me. As a former Hill staffer and investigator of government officials and so forth,
yeah.
I'm just amazed that nobody has demanded that Trump reveal this information. And my question is, what is Congress doing to make sure this never happens again? All presidential candidates, it's like a job interview, should be subject to a tough vetting process. And this kind of information, tax returns, annual reports of his companies, even though they're privately held, should all have been on the record before we voted for this idiot.
Well, are you suggesting it's too late to look at it now, Chris?
No, I'm not saying that at all. And in fact, I will predict that even if Trump bears out through the next year, there will be a Democratic swing next year. Drip, drip, drip is going to continue, and Trump, I believe, will not finish his term. He will be impeached over some of the very stuff that has been revealed on this show today, and I thank you for that.
Chris, I appreciate your call. Drew, do you see a never-again movement in Congress to tighten up the requirements for presidential candidates in the future? Never mind what happens over the next couple of years here.
Anything's possible. I mean, you look back 40 years to when Nixon was office and had his own sort of "I'm not a crook" movement. That was, that's when we started the tradition, the norm of automatic audits of the president every year, voluntary release of tax returns every year by the president. There was a push for transparency into these sorts of things because American voters realized, I'm sick of being surprised every day by some strange moment of history of my president. So maybe there will be a push for a lot of these things weren't codified in law, these rules for presidents, mm-hmm. because it was kind of the honor system. You sort of expected that the president would just release their tax returns because they want to be trusted by the people. They want to have integrity. So maybe there will be a push to sort of codify these things so it's not just a norm you can easily bend, but it's a rule that you have to follow.
James Henry, as we sit here today talking, do you feel confident that this administration is beyond the influence of debtors and equity holders?
No, I don't. But I don't think the Congress is asking the right questions. They're focusing a lot on the intel. The issue we've seen here, and we could talk about a dozen projects that are mm-hmm. probably even worse than the Azerbaijan that need to be audited. But the problem is what we've seen is a pattern that, this is a guy who basically after six bankruptcies prior to 2000, suddenly he was able to recreate his fortune. And he did that with the help of an awful lot of Russian and former Soviet Union investment. And loans from a very Russian-connected German bank. So, this is what accounts not only for Trump but also for Vladimir Putin. It was the 1990s and the oligarchs that were created there. That is really the problem that Congress needs to face up to.
Adam Davidson, do you feel the system rising to this challenge? You got 20 seconds here, Adam.
The opposite. It's very, very depressing.
That's just wild. Why do you think it wouldn't respond, Adam? In the past, I can imagine all hands on deck.
I think that it's partisan politics. It's a fairly simple understanding of why people are being cowardly, but they're being cowardly. It's unbearable.
House Intelligence Committee, James Comey, FBI director, tells them they are investigating links between Russia and Trump affiliates. Adam Davidson with The New Yorker, thank you very much for being with us today. Thanks for joining us, Adam.
Thank you.
Drew Harwell at The Washington Post, thanks for joining us, Drew.
Thank you.
And James Henry, who's written a lot for DC Report, thank you so much for being with us today, Jim.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.